This is Jordan Secchio. Today on Jay Secchio Live, right now, Bruce Orr from the Department of Justice is being grilled by the House Oversight Committee.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Secchio Live.
The fundamentals don't change. The fact that top Department of Justice official's wife is working for the firm the Clintons hired to put together the dossier, and then the FBI uses the dossier that they're getting from Bruce Orr. Peter Strzok told us that, to then go get the warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. So that's a big concern. Who at DOJ knew that? Did Sally Yates know what was going on? I mean, I don't know. So we got lots of questions for him.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
I want to know his precise role. I mean, we know just from the documents that we have that he was functioning almost as an intermediary between the Clinton campaign and Fusion GPS and the Obama Justice Department.
And now, your host, Jordan Secchio.
So today on Jay Secchio Live, Bruce Orr is before the House Oversight Committee in a joint hearing with the House Judiciary Committee. In this kind of situation, it's not like what we're used to seeing on television where you just have all the members of Congress, they kind of give speeches and long-winded questions that get pretty short answers, sometimes heated, and they can go on and on. This is more like, a real kind of a deposition, if you will, where you've got no cameras there, so you're not playing to a camera or a soundbite, and you're really getting into the information that needs to be addressed. Yesterday, we talked about what questions need to be asked. We're still talking about it today on the broadcast, but we're also getting broader into what needs to happen at the Department of Justice and FBI. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Right away on Facebook, June writes in, do you really think Orr will talk in there? Let me go to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Than, has there been any indication yet that Bruce Orr has been unwilling to answer questions?
It seems like the early indication, Jordan, is that he has been answering questions. Now, we don't know how substantive. We don't know if he's given conflicting information on previous testimony. But at least the early indications from inside the room is he has not invoked his Fifth Amendment, that he is at least answering questions. It's tough to say beyond there. I mean, yesterday, Jordan, this was my primary question. Will he answer questions at all? Because, look, for today to be worth anything, this session has to focus on the facts. If it's going to focus on whether or not he's going to be cooperative with the committee, then we won't learn a lot. But here's the data point, Jordan, that suggests to me that he's actually answering pretty substantively. Is I heard from a staffer in the room that they now expect this to go well into the night. They think it might go 10 or 12 hours.
Okay.
So if he's not answering questions, they'd have no need to go 10 or 12 hours.
He's already been there for three. Since at time of this broadcast, while we're live, he's already been in that room for 3 hours. And as Stan said, I think that's a bit of breaking news that this could go late into the night, which means that Bruce Orr is answering questions. There may be points where he says, I can only go so far because of the advice of the DOJ attorneys about an ongoing investigation. We've seen Peter Strzok use that before when he testified that he would only answer to a certain extent and then try to insert that. We'll play that for you when we come back. But we are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110 because a former FBI special agent and legal attaché for the FBI wrote in the Wall Street Journal, I think, a great piece, How to Restore the FBI's Culture, and there's four main points. We're going to go through all four for you throughout the show. Let me read them for you real quick, the main headlines of those. The centralization of case management at FBI headquarters. We'll talk about that. Restoring what is now bad relations with Congress. Fixing a dysfunctional FISA process. That, of course, has been very important when you're talking about spying on American citizens. And finally, emphasizing the Constitution and that the way the Constitution guarantees the rights that the Constitution guarantees to the American people. These are all interesting, and why? Why are these four main recommendations? We will get into that on the show today at 1-800-684-3110. What else do you think it will take to reform the Department of Justice and the FBI? Is it a special counsel to rid out these wrongdoers? Is it more than that? 1-800-684-3110, taking your phone calls on this topic as Bruce Orr is testifying now before this closed-door House Oversight and House Judiciary Committee session right now. He does have his attorneys present. I think he has four attorneys present with him right now. Some of that is to protect ongoing investigations. Other than that is, he's an American citizen to protect himself. 1-800-684-3110, get your calls and questions in. We will be right back on Jay Secchio Live.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, ACLJ.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Bruce Orr right now has already spent 3 hours testifying behind closed doors in the House Oversight and Judiciary Committee in a joint session. They are now, as Stan Bennett broke earlier in the show, expecting that this could go well into the evening, late into the hours tonight. Which means Bruce Orr, something substantive is coming out of it. He's not just taking the fifth. He's not answering questions as well. I think that he is so key to so much that we have now pieced together and put together and learned about this investigation because of the role with his wife at Fusion GPS, the role of his ongoing relationship with Christopher Steele, the work that he did with Christopher Steele even after Christopher Steele was fired by the FBI. Remember, he wrote the dossier Steele, former British intelligence. And then the work he may have done, and I'm sure he's going to be asked about this, if not already today, to try and get Steele reinstated with Bob Mueller's team. So it involves a special counsel as well. It involves Peter Strzok using Bruce Orr to continue working with Christopher Steele, even though the FBI had severed that relationship. So he used Bruce Orr as a go-between. The other big question is who else was involved? I mean, Harry, that is the kind of the number one question of the day is, was Bruce Orr really doing this on his own with like a Peter Strzok-level person? Or did the Sally Yates of the world, did people higher up within these departments, whether it's the Department of Justice or the FBI agency, know what he was up to?
Absolutely. So we want to know how far this virus reached within the Department of Justice and the FBI. Sally Yates, yes, in all likelihood. Did the information include... Or does Bruce Orr's testimony implicate, for instance, Rod Rosenstein? Does it implicate additional officials at the FBI? So these are essential questions. And we also want to know why Bruce Orr was acting as a counterintelligence officer at the Department of Justice, even though his job carries no counterintel role. It's very interesting to understand his position within the Department of Justice and then to look at his conduct with respect to meeting with Christopher Steele on several occasions. Meetings and text messages, I think he's met with Steele up to 60 times. Why is he doing that?
Let's go right to the phones. Greg in Ohio, on line 4. Greg, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Jay. I am just so indebted to you for the work you guys have done to bring this to the light of day. For the longest time, I thought these snakes were going to slither away, much like Hillary Clinton got off the hook. But you know, it's one thing to allege Russian collusion, and I would be upset as an American student, American citizen, if I discovered that the Russians were trying to interfere with our elections. But to have people, operatives within our own intelligence agencies, plotting against the American people and their constitutional right to vote who they want to vote for is, to me, is borders on being traitors.
And what's interesting, Greg, is they didn't stop. As much as they wanted to impact the election, their chosen candidate lost, Hillary Clinton, and they didn't say, okay, well, we tried, and that would be bad enough, and by the way, should be investigated and potentially criminal, very criminal, to try to impact the election that way, as DOJ or FBI officials and law enforcement officials. That being said, they didn't stop. They said, let's keep undermining. As Jim Comey said, I can get a special counsel appointed if I leak my notes from the president, so I'll do that through a friend. They have continued to wage this war, whether you want to call it a witch hunt or a war against this president from the inside and outside to try and undermine his presidency. Take a listen. This is back when Peter Strzok testified openly about communicating how he got the communication with the dossier. And this is between Congressman Jim Jordan and Peter Strzok. Take a listen, Byte 22.
Did you ever communicate with Glenn Simpson?
No.
Did you ever communicate with Nellie Orr?
No.
Did you ever communicate with Bruce Orr?
Yes.
When did you communicate with Bruce Orr?
My recollection is somewhere between three or four or five times in the late 2016, early 2017 timeframe.
What'd you talk about?
We talked about investigative matters that Mr. Orr was involved in.
Did you talk about the investigation we're focused on here, Agent Strzok?
My direction from the FBI is that I may not answer that question, sir.
So again, Bruce Orr was certainly used as the go-between between the FBI and agents like Strzok, who are leading. Remember, he launched the Russia investigation before there was a special counsel. And Christopher Steele, then he was hired by the special counsel and fired by the special counsel, put back at the FBI and ultimately terminated by the FBI. I mean, but this is someone, again, who used Bruce Orr certainly as the conduit to continue the relationship with Christopher Steele and the FBI to continue the work on the dossier. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. As we await to know what else is coming out of and what Congress will learn from Bruce Orr, what makes me nervous, obviously, is that we're relying a lot on Congress right now, and I'm glad the Republican Congress is taking it seriously. But as Stan said, if no Democrats are showing up to really substantively ask questions here, that gives you a little window into what it'd be like if they take back control of the House or the Senate or both. So that's when you may have the need for a actual second special counsel, because Congress has become so partisan on these issues, which should be about reforming the FBI and Department of Justice for everybody. I mean, let me remind you, Democrats, Jim Comey really messed up the election for you, too. It's not like he was just, he just hurt that he hurt Donald Trump. He did ultimately, with his special counsel move. But that reopening of the investigation of Hillary Clinton and closing and open, I mean, all of that, there needs to be real reform. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. You should not like that the FBI has played politics with your voting. And it really, I'm sure, had an impact. I don't know to what extent, if it changed anything, but they should have zero impact, zero influence. That's the job of the FBI. That's why this Wall Street Journal piece, How to Restore the FBI's Culture, is so important. I want to walk through some of these pieces right now. This is written by Thomas Baker, a former a retired FBI special agent and legal attaché. He's talked about, what do we have to do? The way forward requires, he says, quote, a renewal of culture, a turn away from the intelligence-driven mindset of Robert Mueller and Comey years, and a return to the old ethos of a fact-finding, swear-to-tell-the-truth law enforcement agency. Director Christopher Wray has acknowledged there were problems. He has stated that to numerous audiences that in running the Bureau, he'll put an emphasis on process and the brand of the FBI. Each of these specific problems from the Mueller-Comey years that have identified must be addressed. Here's the first. The centralization of case management at FBI headquarters. Okay, so let's unpack that. According to Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, an email from Mr. McCabe, former deputy director of the FBI, said that Hillary Clinton would receive an HQ special, headquarters special, lenient treatment in the investigation into her handling of classified materials. Mr. Ray has tasked Associate Deputy Director Paul Abbott to review how the Bureau manages sensitive investigations. Part of the answer is for case management return to the time-tested field office model with its layers of review. So instead of handing out, quote, HQ specials. Harry, right there. When you get an HQ special from the FBI, you're getting a pass from the FBI.
And absolutely.
What they're saying is you can no longer, people will not respect the FBI if that's how they operate.
Centralization leads to two things. One, lenient treatment of favored individuals, and the politicization of the FBI. In essence, the FBI was weaponized during the 2016 election to favor one particular candidate. And then once that candidate was off the hook, the FBI launched its campaign essentially against candidate Trump. This is unsustainable in a republic committed to the rule of law.
Folks, we are continuing to take your calls. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I mean, Than, in Washington, getting an HQ special, this should be shocking to be. I mean, just that alone should be enough to get people fired and maybe criminally investigated. An HQ special, which meant Hillary Clinton wasn't under oath, to remind people. Her attorneys got immunized from everything, so they got immunity and were able to still be there when she gave her testimony, which wasn't under oath. But an HQ special. I mean, this is Washington at its worst, and this retired FBI agent says that's where it starts. It starts with how these investigations begin or are conducted. That's how you have to reform. Not even with the people, he said, but it's with how we allow investigations to move forward.
Jordan is absolutely correct as well. I mean, how many times have we heard on this broadcast that it appears like there's a double standard, that if you or I had done what Hillary Clinton did or any other number of politically connected figures had done, they would have been treated different. And it's because of this centralization problem. It's because when there is a matter that involves maybe the ruling class, Jordan, that it gets pulled inside the D.C. Bureau up to the seventh floor of the FBI and treated differently. And I would just remind you about those text messages that we uncovered where they're the fifth floor, which is counterintelligence, was fighting with the seventh floor. That's because the seventh floor wanted this case treated with kid gloves, Jordan. That is what centralization leads to. And this first point in this Wall Street Journal editorial is precisely correct. Hillary Clinton should have been treated like you or I would have been treated in the same scenario. It should have been handled by the field office and a recommendation sent up.
All right, folks, we will continue to take your phone calls. Get your calls in, 1-800-684-3110. We're screening those now. You can get your questions in on Facebook and Periscope as well. Remember, we have a matching challenge with a few days to go this month. This is very important to support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. Whatever you're able to donate online is doubled. I will go through some of that work that we're doing on the persecuted Christians around the world in the next segment of the broadcast. 1-800-684-3110 to ask your questions on the air.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, aclj.org.
Here is Congressman Matt Gaetz. He's did a press gaggle this morning discussing Bruce Orr. Take a listen because he's brought up directly in this Wall Street Journal piece. And he was with the FBI as well, Byte 24.
You had Bruce Orr going very rogue in the absence of authority or direction, choosing to take it upon himself to go and meet with his wife's employer to transmit information from political opposition research into information relied on by the intelligence community.
Well, and listen, that is if he didn't go further than that. You know, if he wasn't being directed, if he wasn't being run by someone else, I suspect Bruce Orr, to some extent, may have been doing it on his own, but was also being encouraged by people like Peter Strzok to keep this relationship open because the FBI had closed it with Christopher Steele, so they want to keep it open. So he first said, you know, what needs to be done at the DOJ? Let me go to Steve first in California, take a call, 1-800-684-3110. How do we reform these agencies in light of the Peter Strzoks, the Bruce Orrs, the Andrew McCabes, the Jim Comeys? I mean, the list goes on. And what do we do about it when you're talking about such an important part of our government, Department of Justice, and the FBI, which it oversees? Let's go to Steve, California, line one. Steve, welcome to JSecio Live.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
Hey, you know, I'll tell you what, I have lost all faith. You know, I've been watching and listening to this now for years, and nothing changes. You know, you've got Sessions with his heels dug in, and everybody's been caught. Everybody knows that they've been caught. Hillary's been caught. Sessions is, or Comey's been caught. Strzok has been caught. And they're smug. They don't care. And they keep going. And you know what?
Well, let's be honest, though. Comey is no longer there. Strzok is no longer there. McCabe is no longer there. Hillary Clinton lost. So, and to some extent, those people have faced consequences. I'm not saying was it soon enough or if it's been harsh enough. But I think what we realize, Steve, is I get your frustration. This is long-term planning. And probably it's not Jeff Sessions who's going to be the attorney general that can get this done. He's probably not, just because of the recusal and just so much else going on, just doesn't have the strength. We've said from the beginning that the toughest job for the cabinet officials, probably other than running our military and our national defense at the cabinet level, would be reforming government agencies, specifically the weaponized Department of Justice and FBI, and it takes a lot of work to do that as well. So we have to get to that point. If you've got a question or comment, call us 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Working through this Wall Street Journal piece on how to restore the FBI's culture, what we've been talking about. First was to centralize, to get rid of the kind of the centralization of case management at FBI headquarters and to return to the field office model with layers of review so you don't get a quote HQ special. We walk through that. Second, as Stan mentioned, bad relations with Congress have got to change. The FBI needs to reestablish a climate of mutual respect with lawmakers. The Gang of Eight, congressional leaders and intelligence committee chiefs, is a time-tested vehicle for sharing sensitive information. The Bureau should use it. The head of Office of Congressional Affairs should come from the ranks of its agents. During the troublesome Comey years, that role was held by a politician. A special agent would have the institutional knowledge to respond to Congress, whose members would afford an agent more credibility. Let me go right to Stan, because he's in Washington, D.C., oversees our government affairs. Stan, that points out, too, a problem people may not have even known about in the Comey years, is that they were playing politics with who was working with members of Congress. So you had a partisan there. So then you're kind of isolating half of Congress when you do that.
Yeah, Jordan, not only who was working with Congress, but who they would make available to come to Congress to testify, what documents they would turn over, what information they thought that the Congress had oversight over them. Look, I mean, Congress created the Bureau. They have oversight of them for a reason. It's so that people who are elected by the American people have oversight over the decisions that have made. But look, Jordan, we have seen, over, especially over this last 12 months, reaching back even further than that, really the FBI thinks that they get to make these decisions on the seventh floor of their bureau and they don't have to respond to anyone on it. I mean, how many document fights have we seen with the House Oversight Committee, with the House Intelligence Committee, with the Senate Judiciary Committee? On and on it goes, whether it's Rod Rosenstein or Peter Strzok or Bruce Ohr, documents relevant to investigations that they have done, that the American people have asked Congress to look into, have been stonewalled time and time again, and they either take so long to get there that they're barely relevant by the time they arrive, or they're redacted to the point that they're not useful, or, Jordan, they never arrive in the first place. So look, this is also a very important point. The FBI will have more credibility with the American people if they again subject themselves to the proper oversight role of the Congress. And I would just tell you this, there is maybe some barbs we should send Congress's way as well. Congress should insist on this, Jordan, and if they don't get it, guess what? There should be a funding penalty to it. So it goes both ways. The FBI needs to be under their oversight, and Congress needs to take its oversight role even more seriously than they have over the last several years.
Let's remember, we've got a second half hour coming up at Jay Sekulow Live. Two more points just in this Wall Street Journal piece on what has to be done, not just for DOJ, this is just for FBI. What has to be done at the FBI to restore its credibility? We'll get into those next two points. The first one was decentralization of case management at the FBI headquarters, so you don't get the HQ special. The second was restoring bad relations with Congress. We'll get to the third and fourth. We come back in our second half hour. But I wanted to let you know about some of the work we're doing at the ACLJ and part of our matching challenge. This email went out. Some of you who are on our email list may have gotten this today already. The nightmare of genocide and persecution of Christians impacting kids the most. So we've been telling you about the genocide, the kidnappings, the crucifixions, the barbaric beheadings. But here's some statistics. Serious Christians, 66% have been decimated since the ISIS and the civil war there, though ISIS now is on the run. In Iraq, Christians, 90% of their Christian villages and place of worship have been destroyed, and the people have at least been either displaced or killed. One little girl pleaded to the UN. We cried to the UN, but nobody came to help us. Today, the village is surrounded by mass graves. And it's not just in the Middle East. In Nigeria, Christians are just a few years from being completely wiped out, on the edge of extinction. If we don't act, more Christians will die. So what we're doing at the ACLJ, we're drastically expanding our largest global legal advocacy for Christians facing genocide and brutal persecution. We've just filed 6 critical legal submissions to the United Nations, and now we're preparing to make our most expansive oral interventions at the UN for Christian children facing barbaric genocide at the end persecution. We can't sit by as Christian kids die. I mean, that's just a basic fact. As Americans, and as many of you who are listening as people of faith who understand that these are basic freedoms. But we need help to do this. You know, all this work at the UN to bring this to the world's attention, to bring it to the U.S. government's attention as well, requires resources. And we do this work because of your support for the American Center for Law and Justice. That's why those kids are able to have a voice. That's why people like Andrew Brunson have the kind of voice that he gets in the U.S. and the kind of legal work he gets from the ACLJ and the relationships and the government affairs work. It's because of your support. You know, he's not paying bills. He's not being charged. We're doing that work because of your support for the American Center for Law and Justice. So whether it's these large reports on this wide-scale genocide of Christians, or it's the individual stories that we know about as well, like Andrew Brunson's, and the many others that we've worked on throughout our history at the ACLJ, we need your support for the American Center for Law and Justice. We're heading towards the end of the month. That means we're heading towards the end of the matching challenge, where whatever you're able to donate is doubled. You donate online at aclj.org. Right on the homepage, you'll see a matching challenge button. You'll see the donate now button. It'll say matching challenge. What does it mean to donate during a matching challenge? If you donate $10, 10 becomes 20. 20 becomes 40. 40 becomes 80. We need you so we can do this work to protect and tell the story of these Christians who have faced genocide. To donate right now and double the impact. ACLJ.org. Donate now. Be part of our matching challenge. Ends at the end of this month. We'll be right back on our second half hour.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. sign on to our petition calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. Our second half hour, let me reset for you if you're just joining us. Bruce Orr right now is testifying before a closed House and Judiciary Committee hearing. It's already gone on for over 3 hours. Than is already getting reports that this could go late into the evening. So far, we can't confirm that a single Democrat on the committee, a single elected official, congressman, has actually attended or asked questions of Bruce Orr, that they're letting their staff so far do that. It's not the case on the Republican side. We've walked through some of the questions yesterday in the broadcast we believe have to be answered about Bruce Orr. Who else knew at the Department of Justice? Was he really rogue? I don't really believe that because he was working with Peter Strzok, and Peter Strzok said so on the record. We've already played that soundbite for you, so he wasn't acting totally rogue. But was he doing it on his own volition, or was he kind of being directed, or was he getting an okay, a green light to do this work even after Christopher Steele gets fired? When Christopher Steele asked to join and speak with Bob Mueller's team, did that ever happen? And what did Bruce Orr do to try and set that up? He took a phone call, because we know through the WhatsApp messaging between Christopher Steele and Bruce Orr, that he did want to, he didn't just say no. He said, let's talk about it on the phone. So we need to know what kind of contact Bruce Orr had with the special counsel's office on behalf of Christopher Steele. I mean, there's many questions to ask. There's also the bigger picture, which is how do we reform these institutions? And one of those, the FBI. And there's a great piece of the Wall Street Journal today that talks about four main ways to restore the FBI's culture. We've talked about two of those already. Decentralization of case management at FBI headquarters so that Hillary Clinton types don't get a, quote, HQ special anymore from the types like Andy McCabe. Restoring bad relations with Congress, setting up a new representative that isn't political, that makes sure that Congressional Affairs Director is not someone who is coming out of the political world, but is, in fact, an agent. So it's not, again, something that is so troubling to people or so partisan. Here is the third. We haven't talked about this one yet. Fixing a dysfunctional Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act process. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes has said Congress will look at doing this after the midterm elections. Of course, that depends on how the midterm elections turn out. But the FBI and Justice Department need not wait. They should adopt an internal standard to avoid the use of FISA to target an American citizen before Congress forces more restrictive controls on counterintelligence investigation. You see, this is a former FBI official saying, if you don't want your power taken away, FBI, by Congress, then you need to start putting in your own controls now when it comes to targeting American citizens by using the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. I want to go to Harry Hutchinson on this point. Harry, a lot on FISA. In fact, let me take the call. There's been so much on FISA with this as well because of the potential abuse there, because of the dossier's use for FISA warrants. Robbie in New York's calling in online too. Robbie, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. Here's my question. Why there are four dossiers that were signed off on that I am aware of. Is that correct?
Are you talking about four FISA warrants?
Yeah.
Yeah. Based off the dossier. Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha.
That's what, you know, that's what we're aware of. FISA is a secretive process. You rarely know exactly all that's been done. So what gets reported is usually only verified by the person who it happened to. It wouldn't be verified by the government. It'd be the, you know, a Carter Page type who's talked about it. But even they would only kind of learn about it secondhand because of maybe the surveillance being done to them. They would not be notified. So, but go ahead, Robbie.
So my second question is, we know that there are at least four. So why can't you subpoena the people who signed off on the dossier, including Rod Rosenstein? Why can't they be brought in front of this committee and be made to answer for signing off on a document that was completely fake?
They could, Harry. I mean, they could. Some have. I mean, you do have. I can't get into all of it right now, but let me just say the McCabe types, all those people who signed on, yay to others, they could be brought up.
Yes, and we also need some information on who provided the information to Sally Yates and to Rod Rosenstein.
Yeah, did they know that the information was based off this dossier? Were they just kind of going through the standard process? Same with the judges. Did they have any idea really what was happening? 1-800-684-3110. Phone lines are open. What should Bruce Orr be asked today? What do you hope he's being asked today? Give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. What do you hope Congress is asking Bruce Orr right now? The House Judiciary Committee and the House Oversight Committee in a joint closed-door hearing. Already been asking Bruce Orr questions for over 3 hours. We expect we're getting reports that will go later into the day as well. We've not yet gotten confirmation that a single member elected Democrat has asked questions, that they're letting their staff do it. So how do things change if the House changes? Well, that's one example for you in these investigations, which is why there may very well be a need. Obviously, we've supported that for a second special counsel to investigate the wrongdoing at the FBI and Department of Justice and the individuals involved in put together a plan of, one, prosecuting those who may have committed crimes, but two, getting rid of, at least firing those who were committed fireable offenses within the bureaucracy. 1-800-684-3110, what do you hope is being asked of Bruce Orr? One of the questions, we didn't get it full time, Harry, because we were running up against the break, but we got asked right at the end of the last segment, which is, what about the people who signed on to the FISA warrants? And Will, let's pull that list. Of who signed on to some of these FISA warrants, can they be questioned as well? The caller asked about Rod Rosenstein. He's in this unique role because he's deputy AG. He's overseeing the Russia probe, but certainly he has to testify regularly to Congress. So he could, anytime a member of Congress could ask that question in those hearings. But there's others as well.
Absolutely. So we know this. We know that Rod Rosenstein and Sally Yates signed 3 out of the 4 FISA warrants. That's number one. Number two, we want to know what information was provided to Sally Yates and Rod Rosenstein before they signed the warrants. So we need to know who was in the room, who accumulated the information. Yeah. Was, for instance, Bruce Orr in the room when Sally Yates or Rod Rosenstein signed the FISA warrant? Did Bruce Orr, for instance, notify Sally Yates and or Rod Rosenstein that his wife, Nellie, helped work with Fusion GPS, that Bruce Orr was involved with Christopher Steele, the MI6 agent who was fired by the FBI as an informant? So those are questions we need to ask before we put Sally Yates and Rod Rosenstein under oath with respect to why they signed those warrants.
Yes, we know four have been reported that we know about, the FISA warrants. We know some of those are targeted specifically Americans for surveillance, so targeting of American citizens and surveillance, which, again, they're not notified of. It's again, in a very serious process. We know here the people we know who signed on it. As Harry said, some of these names we've already said, Rod Rosenstein and a Deputy Attorney General and former Attorney General for Acting Attorney General Sally Yates. There are also Jim Comey, Rod Rosenstein, Andrew McCabe as well. So the question is, did Peter Strzok tell Andrew McCabe, you know, about what Bruce Orr was providing to him on this dossier to get to these FISA warrants? Did McCabe tell Comey? Did Strzok tell Comey? I mean, he was high up enough to have interaction with Jim Comey, but he had a lot of interaction with Andrew McCabe, and he started the Russia investigation. So, again, this is what we know. This is all that we actually know. There could certainly be more when it comes to FISA. It's secret. So this is just what we know that has come out on the FISA process. And again, I think it's very important. As we talked about in this way of reforming the FBI in the Wall Street Journal today, that was point three, was that the FISA process must be change, or Congress is going to make it tougher to do counterintelligence investigations. And this FBI agent saying that's not a good thing for the FBI, but they can't be seen as abusing, and what we believe is they are abusing their power. If you want to talk to us on the air, it's 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Can the swamp be drained? I don't think it can be done in 1-2 year election cycle. But I think that you've got to keep reelecting those who are committed to doing it. And we know we're facing tough elections coming up in the midterms based off a lot of polling and a lot of information that could be very close. Can the swamp be drained? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Here is point number four on this Wall Street Journal piece about how to reform the FBI before you have to start taking its powers away, because the American people have just so much distrust for it. The point is, a quote, that there has been a lack of emphasis on the Constitution at the FBI. Well, how true that is. FBI special agents always have been instructed about the Constitution, but there's a new category of employee who arose after 9/11, intelligence analysts who don't directly interact with citizens in ways that touch on the constitutional guarantees, now play a major role in the Bureau's mission. So what, more like a CIA analyst, someone who is doing analyst work, who is not doing field work and working with individuals, so that doesn't understand maybe how the constitutional interplays and the constitutional rights that Americans are protected by. But they now play a major role in the Bureau's mission. Now, I think a lot of this is refining the FBI in a post-9/11 world, still out this many years from that, but still refining that as well. That these employees deal in estimates and guesses, and their actions also ultimately affect people's liberty. It's imperative that they, too, receive training about the Constitution. I mean, it's pretty basic, Harry, constitutional training for FBI analysts, so that intelligence analysts, so that they aren't violating Americans' constitutional rights, which this FBI should say they don't have. So they are violating our rights, which I think why they get into so much hot water. Every time we investigate the investigators, they've got problems.
Absolutely. So one of the big issues at the FBI is that there's insufficient emphasis on the notion of probable cause before launching an investigation. It seems clear, based on the factual record from 2016 and 2017, that the FBI was focused on allegations, even though there was no evidence that an actual crime was committed. And so that means that they are investigating individuals with whom they have no evidence that a particular crime had been committed. So there's no evidence, for instance, of that a crime was committed with respect to so-called Russia collusion. If we look at Carter Page, this is grounded largely in an unverified, salacious dossier from an unreliable source. Yet the FBI launched an investigation. The other question that we have to look at is this question. Were FISA judges compromised because they had personal relationships with members of either the DOJ or the FBI? There is some evidence that at least one FISA judge had a relationship with one of the individuals involved in counterintelligence. So the question then becomes, did that American citizen get an independent, impartial hearing before the judge before the FISA warrant was issued? We need answers to those questions.
I've asked you what you want Bruce Orr to be asked today. Robert wrote in on Facebook just now, I want Bruce Orr to be asked if he was aware the information he received was false and fabricated and used to get a FISA warrant. Well, let's remind you, Robert, that his wife put together the information. So, I mean, Than, there's a problem right there, is that with even asking a question like that and believing him, that he, you know, he's not going to probably call his wife a liar. He may try to couch it was political work that was being done as opposition research. But then this follow-up should be after that. Okay, if it's opposition research, why would it be used? Why did you allow it to be utilized? Why didn't you say something before it was utilized as a basis to get FISA warrants on Americans?
Well, it sure looks like that was just how he operated, Jordan. I mean, he continued to work with a source, Christopher Steele, who had been terminated from the FBI for leaking the investigation, which is a serious violation. He continued to work with him. Of course, his wife was putting together the information, so he's not going to call him a liar. Will he use a spousal privilege to not disclose that information? I would argue he should not be permitted to do that because the FBI used the work product. But, Jordan, look, I would tie all of that together with the conversation you just had with Harry about these last two important reforms, about rooting the FBI back in the Constitution and not abusing the FISA process. Look, Jordan, if the FBI wants to target an American citizen, if they want to surveil you, they go before a FISA court and they present evidence. And in this case, they used evidence that they knew was not credible, could not be verified. They used it to surveil Carter Page. Guess who didn't get to be in the courtroom to present a defense or a case in opposition to being surveilled? Carter Page. Jordan, an American citizen who's going to be surveilled by the FBI needs to have an advocate in that room to present a case so that when false information like this is presented as evidence, there is an opposing viewpoint that is heard. So Harry's point about a judge, certainly relevant, certainly needs to be looked at. But look, a judge can only look at the information that's put in front of them. Carter Page, if you are targeted, if I'm targeted, any American that's targeted, they need an opportunity to be in that courtroom and present a defense before they are subject to surveillance.
All right, folks, we are going to be taking your phone calls next segment of the broadcast. We try to take as many as possible. A couple lines are open, so get your calls and questions in now for our final segment, 1-800-684-3110. What should Bruce Orr be asked right now? What do you expect will come out of this hearing? Can we drain this swamp? I think a lot of that, you know, some of that comes down to politics and political victories as well. We've got a matching challenge right now. Support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. Go to ACLJ.org. If you donate now, your donation is doubled. That's at ACLJ.org. Remember, we take your phone calls and your questions in the next segment of the broadcast. Get them in now. You got to get them in now so we can get them on the show in our last segment. 1-800-684-3110 is the toll-free number you call to ask questions on the air, to get on the air with us. We'll be right back.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist to fill the seat created by the retirement of Justice Kennedy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. He has extensive experience and a commitment to adhere to the rule of law and uphold the Constitution. Yet the radical left is pulling out all the stops to derail this nomination. That's why it's so critical to support this nominee. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Stand with us on this critical fight. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, ACLJ.org.
Man on Facebook writes in, Bruce Orr should be asked to recite the oath of office that he took for employment and if he acted accordingly. I think that they'd all have unique answers on that. This is an interesting question from Linda. I mean, this is such a unique situation with Bruce Orr because you got the wife, Nellie Orr, doing the work for Fusion GPS. I mean, you can't, it's like a novel, right? I mean, that's what it sounds like, but it's reality. Linda's calling in from Utah on line three. Linda, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hey, thank you so much. My question was, does Bruce Orr's wife, Nellie, get to sit in the room while her husband is being questioned?
I don't believe in this. Now, listen, if this was a congressional hearing and she an open hearing, she may be able to sit there. I'm not sure she would want to because she'd probably be a witness. But then in this kind of situation, probably not. No, because it's a closed hearing.
I don't believe she's there yet. It's not a courtroom. It's a congressional hearing behind closed doors. I'm not sure if they would have objected, Jordan. I mean, I'm not sure there'd be any reason to not have her behind him like the other attorneys are. I don't believe she is there, though. I will tell you this. I think at some point they may call Nellie Orr to testify herself. So I think she probably wants to be nowhere near that hearing room, but she may not have a choice before too long.
Yeah, so ultimately she's someone who, I mean, but even if she wasn't involved, I don't think your wife would be there today or your husband would be there today because it's a closed session. If it was an open session, that it's totally different. They could be there, but it's different when you're also, that your wife or husband is potentially also a witness. So what it appears like, we saw the footage of him going in, so he went in with four lawyers. Some may have been his personal attorneys, some may have been from Department of Justice because they want to make sure matters that shouldn't be discussed aren't discussed. But that is the case there. 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Larry's call in Indiana on line one. Larry, welcome to Jay Secchio Live. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Larry.
You know, I spent 22 and a half years serving my country.
We appreciate your service.
One of the major reasons I retired was I saw what was going on. And in the last segment, you asked the question, yep, will the swamp ever be drained? And it won't. There may be pockets of dry land in the swamp concerning integrity and honor and loyalty and dedication to the Constitution and the rule of law. But those are the islands. The swamp will always exist, and that does not take away from our responsibility to keep fighting against it.
Well, I think that's a great point, Larry. You know, swamps kind of take over. They keep growing. You know, the vines keep growing. It gets thicker and thicker and denser and denser. And so if you don't fight back, it ultimately consumes. So the swamp can kind of become the whole culture of Washington instead of a part of the culture, which you always fight against, but you know is there. I think just getting back to that point would be pretty good, Harry, is that getting back to a point where, yes, there's a swamp culture of Washington, D.C., but it's just part of the culture instead of the predominant culture.
I think you're absolutely correct. What we want from our government is something called integrity. That has been missing over the last several years in Washington. In the DOJ, in the FBI, in the State Department, integrity has been missing. Keep in mind, with respect to this whole situation involving Russia, State Department officials have been implicated in advancing the Christopher Steele narrative. And so I think the caller is quite right that the swamp is a very massive thing, but we want to expand the amount of land that is unaffected by the toxicity of Washington bureaucrats, and we want to hold people accountable. I think it starts by firing more and more individuals who are at the top.
Than, you were going to be following this all day on Capitol Hill, but we expect, I just want our listeners to know as we're in our final segment of the broadcast, we expect our listeners, we expect the hearing to go on much longer today. That's, you know, it's already gone on for over three, probably close to 4 hours now. That's going to continue.
Yeah, it sounds like it'll go well into the night, Jordan, at least the evening hours. I do think we'll probably, as the afternoon wears on, hear a little bit more from people who have been inside the room as their turn for questioning ends. I imagine they might come out. I don't know how much they will give before the session ends. But, Jordan, just to tie it back into the conversation you just had, I mean, look, we want to restrain the federal government's powers in a general sense, and this is an important way to do it. And I think Bruce Orr is probably inside that hearing room saying, look, I wasn't acting rogue. I wasn't going rogue. I was operating with other people's consent, with other people's knowledge. Jordan, if that's true, we need to know who those people were. If he was, in fact, operating inside the chain of command, we need to know who signed off on those activities so that they are held responsible. Look, I don't think Bruce Orr should have a job inside the Bureau, no matter what his excuse is. But if we want to drain the swamp, if we want a federal government that was responsive to the American people, we need to know who else worked with him. And, Jordan, they should be gone, too.
Yeah, I mean, this is the single issue, is finding out more about, you know, it's tough to believe that it's five or six people in these huge agencies. They all have staff. They all have their own deputies. They ran or still do run big departments. And so I think that it's just difficult to believe, unless it was really an inside job being done. They would have to put that together, too, and explain that between a handful, working with very high-up people, though, like Andrew McCabe and Peter Strzok and Bruce Orr and Sally Yates and then working with Glenn Simpson and others. That they were, and Jim Comey, that they together were kind of pulling this without trying to implicate too many others. That may very well be why Peter Strzok made it to Mueller's team and then was dismissed from Mueller's team, because maybe more people didn't know about his wrongdoing. That being said, remember, this has infected that investigation too. I mean, that is the other part of the questioning that, Harry, I think is so important today as we kind of wrap it up this final segment that I believe is so important today, is we know in the text messages, I'll read it for people here in the WhatsApp messages, Christopher Steele wrote to Bruce Orr last summer, "Hi, Bruce, hope you're well and getting some holiday with the family. Whenever convenient, I would like to chat. There's a lot going on, and we are frustrated with how long this re-engagement, because remember, Christopher Steele was fired from the FBI, with the Bureau and Mueller is taking. Anything you could do to accelerate the process would be much appreciated. There's some new perishable operational opportunities, which we do not want to miss out on. Best to all, Chris." Bruce Orr writes back immediately, "Chris, good to hear from you. Would tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. D.C. time work for you?" So they do that conversation by phone. We need to know, Harry, how was the special counsel's office contacted? Or did Bruce Orr do it? Did they ever speak with Christopher Steele? Did they ever retain him?
Absolutely. So that's a very imperative question. We need to know, was the special counsel's office infected by the bias that comes from Christopher Steele and others within the DOJ, including Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, and other members of the FBI? That is a crucial question for our constitutional democracy, and we should not rest until we have answers to those questions.
All right, folks, we'll be back on tomorrow. If there is follow-up, if we learn more, we will continue to bring that to you. Let me encourage you in this final minute of the broadcast, support the work of the ACLJ. Just a few days left in our matching challenge. Whatever you're able to donate, that's what matching challenge means, online at aclj.org is doubled. So a $10 donation becomes $20, $20 becomes $40. You can do the math here, but even $5 becomes $10 for the ACLJ. A $100 donation becomes $200. It's a big deal. And part of the work that we're doing right now is on the genocide of Christians. I mean, here's some statistics that we're preparing just right now at the UN, six different reports. This is just a small part of the work that we do. Because in serious Christians, 66% of serious Christians have been decimated, just in Syria. In Iraq, 90% of Christian villages and towns have been destroyed. The people have been either killed or displaced. 90% in Nigeria, so outside the Middle East, just years away from completely wiped out a Christian community there. Donate online at aclj.org. Be part of that matching challenge at aclj.org. Talk to you tomorrow.
This is a critical time for the Supreme Court and our nation. President Trump has nominated a brilliant jurist. Judge Brett Kavanaugh is eminently qualified. The American Center for Law and Justice is mobilizing on Capitol Hill, demanding Judge Kavanaugh's immediate confirmation. Sign on to our petition, calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm Judge Kavanaugh without delay. Add your name to our petition right now online, ACLJ.